Mulawani, welcome. My name's Ian Campbell from Palliative Care Australia in Canberra on the lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri peoples. Welcome to Thursdays at 3, our regular series of conversations with people living and working at the end of life. Today we head across the ditch to speak to our friends at Hospice New Zealand. The CEO is Wayne Naylor. Hello, Wayne. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Ian. And yourself?
Well, thank you. Thanks for making time to chat today. Wayne, you come to the CEO role with a long career in nursing as a director of nursing, a clinical nurse specialist, as a nurse lecturer. Where does your passion for palliative care or hospice care come from?
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting question and a sort of a funny part of my whole nursing career. I've never been a person to plan out my career, but I've had a lot of great opportunities. And one of those was moving from a big part of my career is working in cancer care in the UK and then back here in Wellington in New Zealand. And I got to a point where I needed to do something different. And so I left nursing and became a senior analyst for Cancer Control New Zealand, which was an independent advisory group to the Minister of Health here. And primarily my role was setting up the Palliative Care Council, first of its kind in New Zealand. And from then, that was in 2008, I developed a real interest in palliative care. I spent a lot of time working with the hospices in New Zealand, with the hospital palliative care teams, with people in the Ministry of Health, developed a really good knowledge of exactly what was going on in New Zealand with palliative care, what the need was. I did the first research into the need for palliative care in New Zealand. And that, after I think 3.5 years, led me to actually think I want to get back into more of a clinical role in nursing, and a role came up as a director of nursing at a large hospice, and I thought I'll put my hat in the ring for that. Got that, and then spent 9 years leading quite a large nursing team and what we grew into, one of the largest hospice services in New Zealand. So I've now been working in palliative care and hospice for just over 16 years.
Yeah, wow. From a personal point of view and a professional point of view, what are the rewards of working in palliative care? I know here in Australia, often we hear from young doctors, young nurses, and there's a reluctance there to work with death and dying. From a personal perspective and a professional perspective, what are the rewards?
So I guess in my early nursing career, and even not in just the early stuff, but working clinically as a nurse on a ward, some of the most challenging things I experienced was the death of patients, and particularly in general surgery. I worked in general surgery for a while, and then in cancer care. General surgery, the deaths there were not great. They didn't have enough resuscitation, so you're doing CPR on people that should be allowed to die naturally. So I think those early experiences of mine, turning up to a ward and the person you'd be looking after was gone as a student nurse, and I was like, oh, what's happened to that person? And they died on the weekend and no one told me. And so in palliative care, it's so completely different because it's something we acknowledge that people are going to die. So poorly talked about and managed just in the wider community. And, we don't talk about death and dying. It's something you do every day in palliative care. So just that change to recognize we are all mortal, we're all going to die. And when I die, I hope that I have really good palliative care because it can make such a big difference to that journey. It's not a sudden and unexpected thing if you're under a hospice or a palliative care service. Your family knows what's happening. You, hopefully, you know what's happening as well. You have a plan for things. You've got people who can manage symptoms, problems, psychosocial issues. And in New Zealand, and it'll be similar in Australia, the cultural issues. So it's just quite different. And my experience of working with student doctors, student nurses, even now in New Zealand, we have paramedicine students coming in to spend time in hospice. They go away from with a completely different view of what medicine or nursing or any health profession can be like, because I think palliative care brings you right back down to the basics and the very heart of why people get into health in the first place.
Mm. Wayne, tell us about Hospice New Zealand and the work of Hospice New Zealand.
So Hospice New Zealand is the national membership organisation for hospices in New Zealand. We have 32 independent hospice services, ranging in size from very tiny, mostly volunteer services to large independent hospices. So our role is to work for and on behalf of our member hospices. So we run national projects for them. A couple of examples are we've been working over the last 2 years to create a national data infrastructure so that hospices can provide patient level data, cost data, service component delivery data, staffing FTE data. So we can, well, it's almost there to generate a very in-depth picture of what's going on for hospice care in New Zealand. No other health service or sector in our country can do that. We've been working with a group of hospice CEOs on a new funding model for hospices because, you know, like in many other countries, and unfortunately the UK at the moment, hospice funding in New Zealand is not, it's not fully funded. About half of the cost of hospices comes from government. The other half is from community fundraising, donations, and our retail shops. So we've been working on a new model of funding that we are hoping to roll out with hospices and to government soon. We also develop education programs that hospices deliver, like fundamentals of palliative care, foundations of spiritual care, syringe driver training. Many other health providers use those programs, so particularly in aged care, primary care, and in some hospitals and home and community health. We develop resources like a carer's guide. So we develop a guide for carers who are looking after a family member that's available through all the hospices around New Zealand. And yeah, so I guess the other stuff we do is advocacy, awareness raising. Yeah, so we're based in Wellington, the capital city of New Zealand, where our government sits. So we have fairly ready access to MPs when you can get in through the front door. So that's part of our role as well, to go to meet with MPs, to meet with the health agencies, that's Health New Zealand and the Ministry of Health, Cancer Control Agency. So a big part of our role is that. And raising visibility of hospice care in New Zealand as well. We support hospices with a National Hospice Awareness Week around about the same time that you guys run your National Week. We do a few other awareness-raising things. Then we have a big national fundraising event around Christmas time with a big department store here, Farmers. So we raise, last year, over $900,000 for hospices. So we have quite a few different things that we're doing, primarily to support our members, but also to raise capability and capacity of other providers. So, yeah,
a lot of similarities going on. Yeah, you're a busy fella. A lot of similarities there with the work of Palliative Care Australia. But I think perhaps one of the differences, and it might be with how palliative care services are structured between our two countries, but it seems like there's a much stronger network of hospices in New Zealand than perhaps we're used to here in Australia. Is that that network of hospice really the backbone of how palliative care is delivered in New Zealand?
It certainly is in the community, Ian. We have, aside from, well, hospices provide community-based specialist palliative care. In hospitals, we have a network of hospital palliative care teams. I was actually just looking this up earlier on. So there's 18 hospital services, palliative care services across the country, ranging from a small FTE of nursing to a larger team. So with the hospital palliative care teams and hospices, that's the mainstay of specialist palliative care in New Zealand. All major cities and most major towns in New Zealand will have a hospice. So in hospitals, there are no dedicated palliative care beds. The palliative care teams generally don't admit patients. They do consult liaison. So hospices, they all provide community-based services. So that's nurses, allied health, and doctors going out to people's homes. And 18 of them have small inpatient units where people can be admitted, usually for more intensive symptom management, occasionally for end-of-life care where things are just not able to be managed at home. And hospices also provide a lot of education to aged care, primary care, and in some cases they reach into hospitals as well, and also doing consult liaison for community-based providers as well.
Wayne, there's some differences there, but I think one of the things we have in common is something you touched on earlier, is that reluctance to talk about death and dying, and the the inevitability of life. What is it that stops New Zealanders talking about death and dying? And I wonder, is it similar to what stops Australians from talking about death and dying?
Yeah, I actually think it's a very Western culture thing. You know, people used to die quite young, primarily at home, up until probably the early 1900s or getting, you know, into the 1900s. But, and you know the story that death and dying became more medicalized, or whole of healthcare, that people were in hospital a lot more and people were dying in hospital. And those people kind of got pushed to the end of the corridor. So medical care got better, the idea of people dying became something that we're trying to fight against. Mm-hmm. And I think that that pushing dying into other institutions, out of the home, people didn't experience it much, and people still don't experience death very much at all. So it's kind of an unknown. So I think that's one of the big challenges we have, is that society, Western society in particular, has kind of forgotten about what dying looks like, about the fact that everyone's going to die, but people live now to in their 80s generally. Mm. In some parts of our society, it's less age-wise, but, you know, a life expectancy in New Zealand, I think for women is about 83, and for men it's about 80. Mm. So you kind of, death has become a bit detached from our society. And because we don't experience it, we don't know what happens, it's become something we're a bit afraid of now. Mm. And so, you know, if you talk about it, you might talk about it when someone is dying. People talk about it a lot more when they're involved with a good palliative care service, because it's a topic that comes up much more freely in the conversation. People use the D word, although we don't always, because we follow what the patient and the family, how they talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I think there's just a fear of death and dying, not knowing what it's about, not knowing what happens when someone dies, having never experienced it. You don't want to bring it up because it also brings to your mind your own mortality as well. I think there is some evidence that as people get older, their mortality becomes much more real, and so they're more likely to think about and talk about it. But I think for younger people, it's just not even on their radar, death and dying.
Yeah. Wayne, what have you learned from Maori culture, or what does Maori culture teach us about death and dying? I guess, you know, as an outsider looking into New Zealand, one of the things I admire about your country is the way you have embraced Maori culture into life, into every aspect of life and society. It's something we need to do much better here in Australia, and acknowledging the culture and traditions of our First Nations people and embedding that wisdom into how we operate. How is Maori culture acknowledged within the palliative care sector in New Zealand? What lessons come from that?
So I'm not Maori, so I can't talk on their behalf, but the things that I would say are a Maori approach to wellbeing overall is very much aligned to how we approach palliative care. There's a really good model in New Zealand that was developed by Sir Mason Dury called Te Whare Tapawhare, or the four-sided house. And the sides are physical well-being, mental well-being, social well-being, and spiritual well-being. And the house sits on the whenua, or the land, so there's a connection with the land as well. So it's very much the model that is promoted in palliative care and by hospices, and in fact it's kind of used by our health system. So a Māori way of being and wellness is actually quite aligned to how we would like to deliver our palliative care services. I think New Zealand often looks great, but we do have work to do still, and because there's still a lot of inequity that is present for Māori, especially if you're a Māori and you live rurally. and New Zealand, and it's the same and probably worse actually in Australia because you have such rural, remote areas, but our rural and more remote areas struggle with any kind of health service. Mm-hmm. And so hospice reach can be a challenge there as well. And a lot of Māori live rurally, so it kind of doubles the inequity there. But certainly in the areas of spirituality, it's really important for Māori, and I think that's helped us understand that spirituality is really important for everybody. Mm-hmm. Family or whānau is really important as well, and for Māori, and there are other cultures that are similar, decision making doesn't necessarily rest with the person who's unwell, it rests with their whānau, which is the family or the extended family. So recognizing that is important. So you can have a patient-centered approach, but actually you need to be bringing together and listening to the person's whānau as well. Mm-hmm. And the things that we're working more on are making sure that there are options for Māori. So if you go back to one of the founding documents of New Zealand, the Treaty of Waitangi or Treaty of Waitangi, there are some principles that are applied to health. And so we use those as sort of guiding basis for what we're trying to do as well. So that's partnership, ensuring that what we're doing and when we're planning things is done in partnership, having options so that it doesn't have to be a Western model of care. It could be a Hauora Māori or a Māori wellbeing model of care. Tino Ranga Teretanga, which is a Māori word, which means self-determination. So that's mean, you know, or sovereignty or autonomy. So people being able to make their own decisions and choices. Active protection. So that's ensuring that we aren't just thinking things will happen. We're actively going, how do we ensure that this is a culturally safe service? And looking at it and assessing how we're doing and then implementing new things. So we're being active about it, not just a passive, yeah, we've got some protection in place. And then the last one is around equity. So ensuring that we have equity of access, equity of outcome, and equity of experience. So, for example, we know that from our data that Māori access hospice care at a slightly higher rate than non-Māori. So just about 34% of Māori deaths have hospice involvement, just over 33% of all other deaths have hospice involvement. So that's great. So we know we're probably getting there with access, although it's variable across country. But what we don't really know is what their experience is like. Did we meet their cultural needs? Did we meet their whānau needs? So, you know, more work to do there, but a lot that we have learned and are taking forward based on Māori cultural approaches.
When you point to that, I guess, need to better understand the experience that people have within that hospice network, is that where your Dying Reviews campaign comes from? Tell us about that campaign, the Dying Reviews campaign that Hospice New Zealand's been running, and what you're hoping to learn, what you are learning through that.
Yeah, so this is an interesting campaign, and it's something that we've never done before. So it's we're testing it out. So where we started from was, how do we get people to talk about and understand hospice better? And we were fortunate to be approached by a large creative company in New Zealand who wanted to work with us on a project pro bono. So it was a really good opportunity. So we said to them, this is what our problem is. We want to make hospice more visible so that people will talk about it and support it. So they went away, their creative team thought about that problem, and they came back and said, well, we think that if you want people to talk about and understand hospice, you first of all have to get people comfortable talking about death and dying, because if they don't talk about death and dying, they're probably not going to want to talk about hospice. So through a few iterations, we came up with the idea of Dying Reviews, which is essentially kind of based on a Google review type approach, but asking people who are living with a terminal illness or their carers, their family carers, what's it like living while you're dying in New Zealand society? What are the things that work great? What are the things that don't work very well? And what are the things that are actually pretty ugly? And this is about, you know, your everyday interactions with companies, organizations, businesses, health providers, schools. So it's a way of getting the voice of people who are dying more out into the community. So so we have a very simple website, dyingreviews.org. People can go on, put in a little bit of demographic information, pick an area that they want to write a review on, give it a star rating, and then write a short review. We've had over 300 so far. We'd like to get a lot more. And quite a few from family caregivers. So we also want to try and boost the number of people who are living with a terminal illness, because theirs is the voice that we really don't get to hear very often. So it is collecting stuff around healthcare, and there's a little bit about hospice, but there's lots of reviews about all sorts of different parts of our society. And I can tell you that the places are, and well, actually one area that's really interesting that is being rated as quite poor is, I think my comms manager called it Deathman or death administration.
Okay, so yes.
Just navigating systems when you're dying or when someone has died, like banks, for example, insurance companies, those organizations where you have to go in and close down things, move things around.
Yeah.
It's just very complicated, and people are having to tell their story over and over again to multiple different people to do simple things. Well, you would think they're simple, but they're actually not. So so we're getting those stories, and we're getting some really good stories about quite a wide range of settings as well. So workplaces, how well they treat people. There's a great review about someone going to a concert and how they were accommodated. They were unwell in a wheelchair, and the people at the event made it fantastic for them.
Awesome.
A shopping experience. Someone had, you know, fantastic help from a shop assistant to help find clothes and things. So there's some really great stuff, but there's some stuff that's not that great. So what we want to do next with it, once we get a few more reviews, is to develop a report, ideally give New Zealand an overall star rating on how well it treats its citizens who are dying. We would like to go to businesses or business sectors and say, you guys actually didn't rate very well. We'd like to help you to make it easier for people who are dying, or sectors are doing really well and say, you guys are doing great. What can you teach other sectors? And so, and sort of threaded through that is the hospice message around, because we know if you're being cared for by a hospice, lots of that stuff is so much easier, because you can have a social worker can help you navigate, you know, the work and income system or Housing New Zealand system, banking systems, all those kind of things. So that's what we're trying to do. But our ultimate aim is to really elevate the voice of people who are dying in New Zealand.
It's a really smart, bold campaign, and I'll include some links in the show notes. Wayne, just to swap some notes on, I guess, another issue that perhaps we both have in common, and that's voluntary assisted dying. Relatively new here in Australia, Victoria were the first to implement voluntary assisted dying about 4 or 5 years ago now, I think. We're all on a journey here with voluntary assisted dying here in Australia. Where is New Zealand at with that?
So we're just coming up to 3 years of having our End of Life Choice Act being in place. November this year is the 3 year mark. So I think it is, in regards to wider society, it's less than 1% of deaths last year were assisted dying. So there's something like nearly 38,000 deaths and 320 something assisted deaths. So it's a very small proportion of deaths. It's primarily older Pākehā or white people with cancer who are choosing assisted deaths, over 80% or thereabouts. We also know that around 75% of the people seeking an assisted death already have palliative care involved. So clearly palliative care services are still really important. I think overall the service is running as you would expect. There are a few concerns and issues being raised around some of the processes, the speed with which things can happen. Not a huge number of health professionals providing the service, so that's a little bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fully funded health service, so no matter where you are in New Zealand, you should be able to access it. I just talked about this last 2 weeks ago with a reporter and said that actually I'd really like to focus on the 90% of people who die where palliative care would be of benefit, because we don't have a fully funded service. We don't have it available everywhere in New Zealand. Can we please focus on that? Because it's, you know, assisted dying, or it gets a lot of public and political attention, because it is, you know, still a controversial topic. There are quite polarizing views about it. There's no polarized view about the fact that people who would benefit from palliative care should have access to it. I've spoken to the people in New Zealand who support assisted dying. They're very supportive of palliative care as well. So I'd really like to see a bit of a change of focus, because so much time and energy gets spent on voluntary assisted dying, but there's so many people missing out on good quality palliative care and therefore a good death.
Wayne, your conference is coming up, another opportunity for good conversations around palliative care. What are you looking forward to about the Hospice New Zealand conference? It's coming up in November, am I right?
Yep. Yes, just over a month away, so the 4th and 5th of November here in Wellington. I mean, the conference is always a great time for people to get together. You know, we're a relatively small country, but we don't get to, our palliative care sector doesn't get to see each other that often. And also because they're small, people tend to move around a bit. So you have people you know all across the country. So coming together for the conference is a great time for catching up with friends and colleagues and creating new ones, doing that networking. So I'm looking forward to that. I know lots of people in the palliative care sector in New Zealand, so it's always good to catch up with them. And we always try and make it a really good learning opportunity. So we have the fantastic Professor Gauri Agarwal coming across from Sydney. So that would be great. And with her involvement with the Asia-Pacific Hospice Palliative Care Network, to talk about what's going on in our region. I think, you know, New Zealand can be a little bit inward-looking, but I think there's a really great opportunity to have a better idea of what's going on in our wider region and where we might be able to support and help other countries in their journey towards providing really good palliative care, because some countries are still in the early days of it compared to Australia and New Zealand. And I think this conference, we probably have more concurrent sessions than we've ever had in the past. We have 45 concurrent sessions being presented over 2 days. So that's quite a big deal. And we actually had over 80 submissions for abstract, which is possibly our most diverse. I've got quite a few posters as well, but lots of people presenting on the work they're doing in their hospice, in their region. So that's great as well, just to hear what's going on around the country. So that's going to be fantastic. And then the other thing, of course, is the conference dinner. And it'll be like the PCA one. As soon as the band even steps near the stage, everyone's up dancing. So it's always a good night.
The palliative care sector knows how to party, both in Australia and New Zealand. They know what a good time looks like, for sure.
Yeah.
Wayne, you mentioned the Asia-Pacific Hospice Network there, and indeed you play a role on the executive. I think you're the secretary of the Asia-Pacific Hospice Network, and it feels like there's some work there that Palliative Care Australia and Hospice New Zealand could do within our neighbourhood to strengthen end-of-life care, strengthen palliative care within the Pacific region. We have a leadership role to play, and it feels like we could do something together there.
Yeah, I agree. I feel really honoured to be part of the Asia-Pacific Hospice Palliative Care Network Council. So I was on the council as a co-opted member for a little while to fill a vacancy from a New Zealand representative. And then in June this year, I was elected onto the council and then elected as the honorary secretary. I'm also on the finance and people capital committee. I managed to get myself onto that as well. So it's a really I'm finding it really interesting, just learning a whole lot more about what's going on across our region, because it's actually a really big region when you think about it. You know, New Zealand, Australia is kind of down the bottom here, but you've got all of these countries from you know, India, Pakistan, China, Malaysia, Japan, Korea, countries that I've never really had anything to do with in the past, and now learning more about their health systems and particularly their journeys into palliative care. And you know, some of those countries are really advanced in their palliative care like we are, but some of them are very early in their journey. Thinking, for example, our Asia-Pacific conference next year is in Sarawak, and I didn't even know where Sarawak was, but it's in Kuching, and Sarawak is part of Borneo. They're still fairly early days of getting palliative care established. They have a big and difficult to traverse country. So getting services out to remote villages is very difficult. So it's a great opportunity for them to have the conference soon just to boost palliative care with their government. But I think Australia and New Zealand could have a particular influence on those countries close to us. I'm thinking very much of the Pacific Island nations as well. Also sort of their health systems are in some cases quite good, some cases not, but palliative care is kind of a low priority as they try and make sure they have basic health services, but we have an opportunity there to help grow their capability and capacity as well.
And equally, you know, as we touched on with Maori culture and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture, learn from them as well about their cultural practices and their approach to dying and death. I think there's a great exchange of knowledge that could happen there. Yeah, Wayne, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. I'll include a bunch of links in the show notes to the conference and a whole heap of things, the good work of Hospice New Zealand. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Ian. Thanks for the opportunity.
Wayne Naylor there, the CEO of Hospice New Zealand. Thank you so much for tuning in to Thursdays at 3 and engaging in matters of life and death, whether that's via PCA socials or Spotify. You'll find advice, tools and support at the Palliative Care Australia website, where you can also make a donation to support our work. See you next Thursday.